ready to keep you company wherever you are. Carte Blanche, the podcast, brings you immersive, hard-hitting stories anytime, anywhere, every week.
Another week, another jam-packed episode of The Whole Week Wrap with Daily Maverick and Carte Blanche. Joining us this week is Daily Maverick Associate Editor, Ferial Haffagee. Here's what's coming your way. Two South African engineers continue to languish in an Equatorial Guinea prison. Now the UN says, release them. From a disastrous debate to concerning moves by the US Supreme Court, is the American dream fading?
America's place in the world is in rapid decline because of its domestic politics. So while it still may position itself as the leader of what it calls the free world, it really isn't that anymore. And the definition of the free world is itself under enormous contestation.
Then, nuclear rhino horn and taxing cow farts. We look at the more quirky solutions to combat poaching and climate change. But first, we finally have a cabinet, and it's a biggie. With President Ramaphosa adding two ministers and seven deputy ministers, South Africa's national executive is the largest it's ever been. We look at some of the more surprising appointments and ask whether being qualified for the job is what matters most.
Welcome back to the show, Ferial. How are you doing?
Very good, thanks. I think when looking at elections in many countries, I feel like we came out okay. And yes. South Africa's ability to find a power-sharing deal relatively quickly, as well as the fact that we didn't go populist, has made many people sit up and take notice. And it's been nice to see that.
Yeah, definitely. And we'll get a bit more into the chaotic elections in the States and their candidates just making a complete fool of themselves, let's be honest. But first, I want us to focus on local politics. And we survived elections and then we survived very messy GNU negotiations. And now we finally have a cabinet. There were, of course, a few surprises that I think had a lot of South Africans talking. So let's work through some of the bigger appointments in this new GNU cabinet. Tell me firstly, which names really jumped out at you where you went like, wow, that's quite the decision?
You know, so many did. Hey, I suppose my key one, who I'm so interested to see how she's going to do, is the 34-year-old Siviwe Gwarube, was appointed basic education minister. Siviwe just seems like she's been trained for this her whole life and she took to it. It looked to me like a fish to water. All her instincts are right. Very exciting young people. I liked how the appointments were made to address concerns. So the economic sector, which is perhaps our most important, is for me in probably safe hands. You know, the Treasury, Enoch Godongwana, assisted by two very good deputy ministers, deputy finance ministers in David Masondo and Ashore Saropen from the DA. That's very important to bolster, protect the integrity of the National Treasury, which is why I think you saw the markets immediately settle down into a measure of stability and the rand strengthened as well. Park Style over at Trade and Industry, I've only heard good things about that appointment and what he does well and he does quietly. I'm of course looking forward to seeing what the police minister, Cesar Nkuna, does in that vital portfolio. Leon Schreiber at Home Affairs. Home Affairs is so important in all our lives and also as an economic department. So really looking forward to good things. As a whole, though, I think it's a very big cabinet and a really huge executive. So 43, I think, deputy ministers. That is really, really large.
Yes, that is just gigantic. Then I also just want to mention the obvious one that everyone's talking about is, of course, John Steenhuisen, who's now the Minister of Agriculture. I really enjoyed the interview between Daily Maverick journalist Queenan Maswabi and Steenhuisen. He seems pretty gung-ho on really fixing the agricultural sector. He says he really wants to focus on tackling, quote, constraints and bottlenecks in the sector. He also wants to look at property ownership, which I think will be a difficult one to juggle. And it's going to be very interesting to see what he brings to the table, considering a lot of people have said he doesn't really have the necessary qualifications to run the department. What are your thoughts on Steenhuisen's ability to really lead this very, very important department?
You know, I think John Steenhuisen is often an underrated politician, and he's actually been a really, really good MP, leader of the opposition Democratic Alliance at Parliament. He's sometimes upbraided because of what can be an abrasive style. But he was so obviously excited and enamored to have a go at actually governing something that I do think he's going to be a very good agriculture minister. It's not been the worst managed of our portfolios. I read often the work of Wandile Sisulu-Bok, South Africa's Mr. Agriculture. It's a strong sector, good interaction between it and the government. And I think that Steenhuisen's appointment will hopefully only make agriculture stronger. It's such a vital source of our export earnings. It'll be really good to see it succeed. Obviously, that depends on our ports working much, much better. So like everything in government, Lizanne, it's all very interlocked and has to develop simultaneously.
Now, another person that I was keeping an eye on, and I think a lot of people are expecting him to sort of be the clown of cabinet, yeah, is Gayton McKenzie, of course. Yeah. He seems very excited about his position as Minister of Sports, Arts and Culture. He seems very optimistic and passionate, really. I must say, the moment for me during the swearing-in ceremony was when he was asked by Chief Justice Raymond Zondo to sit down. And he said, the last time a judge asked me to sit down, he made me sit for 10 years.
And that is fabulous.
And this is, of course, in reference to his conviction in the 90s for armed robbery. I think, and this is just my gut feel, I think Gayton might actually surprise us in this role.
I must say that I said that his appointment was one of the more perplexing ones, and his head of strategy came back at me and said that's really acerbic and unnecessary. And I agree with him because he has been totally excited and enamored by this position. And maybe it was a really clever, considered appointment by President Cyril Ramaphosa to see that Gayton McKenzie has that kind of personality which you need in a sports, recreation and arts minister, somebody who is of a light touch, and we've certainly seen that with Gayton McKenzie. I also love this ongoing rift between him and Tumi Sowell, who does running with Tumi.
Yes.
Sowell. Tumi said to him, you need to do something about your weight, basically. And he's now promised to start running. So I think that he's going to be an important ambassador for a really vital soft power portfolio. If you saw Tyler and Makatsi won those BET awards this week, where South Africa does really well is in soft power, in its sports, in its arts, in its culture. And he now becomes the public face or the steward of that.
And let's not forget about his plan to make car spinning the new national sport, which I'm all for. I think that's really, really cool. We welcome that with open arms. And then just finally, before we wrap up this segment, I do just want to touch on another appointment that I found quite surprising. And I think the experts in this field also found quite perplexing. And that is, of course, former Basic Education Minister Angie Motshekga as Minister of Defense and Military Veterans. Some defense experts are saying President Ramaphosa made a mistake by bringing new faces into this important department, saying that they should have just really stuck with the existing team until matters really start to stabilize in the DRC and Mozambique, and then you can start fidgeting with kind of who's who in that department. What do you think was the thinking behind her appointment? Because that one was quite left field for a lot of us.
I think it was left field for people who think that the military matters and defense are men's territory, that you need a strong character. So I saw quite a bit of why not make the UDM leader, Bantu Holomisa, who was a general in one of the homeland defense forces, why not make him the man? And for me, it was very clearly this is man's work and it's military men's work. I love that we have a strong woman defense minister. And I do agree with many people, like, for example, Helen Ziller, who say that Angie Motshekga's work at Basic Education has been underrated. I think that she's going to be a stabilizing hand. And also, I look forward to seeing how she plays the geopolitics. I do think that we underestimate and do so at our peril. And it also is about like quite a patriarchal view of women must have certain roles and men must have certain roles. I do have a very different view.
In February 2023, two South African engineers were unlawfully arrested on trumped-up drug charges in Equatorial Guinea. Peter Huxham and Frik Potgieter were detained just 2 days after South African courts seized a luxury superyacht and other assets belonging to the Equatorial Guinea Vice President Teodoro Nguema Obiang Mangwe. Caught in the political and diplomatic crossfire, both men were sentenced to 12 years in one of the country's most notorious prisons. Now, the men's families and the United Nations are demanding their release.
Now, let's keep with African politics. And this is a story that we at Carte Blanche have been following since the beginning. I know Daily Maverick has been on it as well. You've written a whole lot of very detailed features on this. And that's the illegal incarceration of two South African engineers in Equatorial Guinea. The two men, Peter Huxham and Frik Potgieter, have been held in horrid conditions on suspected trumped-up drug charges. Mm. And in June, we saw the families of both men protesting outside the opening of the Pan-African Parliament in Midrand. And they basically said, you need to intervene. You need to help us free our loved ones because this has been going on for far too long. And then with that, the UN Working Group on Arbitrary Detention also added its voice. And they essentially said, you know what? Both governments need to play their part. These men need to be released immediately. So do you think they will give in to mounting pressure?
No, I don't think they will. I mean, Equatorial Guinea isn't exactly a democratic state. It's an authoritarian regime. And there's a view that the two men are held as kind of not as ransom, but as revenge for South Africa impounding the property and a super yacht belonging to the Obiang family. Their detention is an insult to South Africa for what it did by impounding their wealthy, ill-gotten wealth here. So I don't think that it's a country that's given to acceding to international law. I do think the protest at the Pan-African Parliament was very important, very well organized. And it is for our country to keep the pressure on for these two citizens of ours, in the same way that we're acting for the human rights of Palestinian people. I hope the campaign grows in voice and that certainly we use the African Union hearings, the African Union session later this year to relay our concerns about this.
Now, listeners can follow all the latest developments on Daily Maverick's website, and Carte Blanche will, of course, also have updates on this as they come through. In the meantime, you can wrap your head around this. Really, it's a very complex political case. So you can head on over to the Carte Blanche website and look for the story titled Black Beach Hell, which we aired a couple of years ago, and where we speak to the families and just detail all the injustices that these men face.
It's one of the worst prisons in the world, right?
Yes, it is. And we spoke to a previous prisoner, a political prisoner, a couple of years ago, and he just took us straight into those hellholes, really, is all that you can call them. The torture and the inhumane conditions they have to live in. So, yeah, I can't imagine what these two engineers are going through.
2 weeks after the disastrous debate between US President Joe Biden and Republican presidential candidate Donald Trump, many are calling for 81-year-old Biden to quit the race. But just this past week, Biden insisted once again that he's not going anywhere. As the world comes to terms with the reality of yet another Trump term, we look at how conspiracism and authoritarian rule could make its way into the Oval Office.
Next, we move over to US politics, and gosh, talk about a mess. First, we need to talk about the recent Trump-Biden debate. For me, it felt like watching toddlers bicker. It was incoherent. It was very juvenile. And now you have people questioning whether President Biden is good for another term. What are your thoughts on this?
You know, I must say, as somebody who's always concerned with the dignity of the elders and also believes that people should stay in workplaces and doing what impassions them for as long as they want to, against like global ageism, which we see. I do think, though, that it was clear cut that President Joe Biden is not good for another term. His body, his mental capacity, his acuity was very clearly on show there. And obviously, this has been a narrative of the campaign. But he tactically chose to have the debate so much earlier, and then it has opened up a hornet's nest for the Democrats. I think I was reading just earlier, White House called a meeting of Democratic governors and said, does Biden still have their support? And it's entirely unclear, Lizanne, that he does. And so it definitely looks at this point like the U.S. is headed for another Trump presidency from all the polls. And that surely is disastrous news, not only for America, but for the rest of the world as well.
Yes, because an analyst for the Washington Post basically said that another Trump administration, it's not going to be like his previous term, because this time he's almost bringing with him this cult-like following.
Yes.
And the messaging is stronger, way more conservative, far right. And that is a huge concern, not just for the United States, but for global politics as a whole. So I'm just wondering, what does another Trump term mean for the world and for our sanity?
No, I think I've been reading many pieces which look at how America's place in the world is in rapid decline because of its domestic politics. So while it still may position itself as the leader of what it calls the free world, it really isn't that anymore. And the definition of the free world is itself under enormous contestation. But what was clear from the debate is that Donald Trump is no longer concerned even to put facts into the world to debate on any rational basis. I mean, if you saw all the fact checks out of the debate, he merely spouted a range of complete untruths, told as fact. And that's the kind of universe he ushers us into. And it's one that we're seeing replicated in many Trump speeches in Argentina and in other parts of the world. It catches, it's catchy like a virus, which again, back home, I'm happy that we've chosen a path of rationality, a kind of politics of the center where people have come together to see how we may best be governed.
And then just to wrap this up, I also want to just touch on the strong conservative direction things have taken in the States in recent months.
Sure.
We, of course, had the Supreme Court ruling that came through, and it states really very simply, it states that any U.S. president is effectively immune to criminal prosecution as long as they can classify whatever they did wrong, so to speak, was part of their formal duties as president, which is mind-boggling. It's basically saying a president can do whatever he wants and he will never have to face up to any of that. But we've also seen a strong religious slant on many legislative matters. There's the banning of abortion and also a proposed ban on contraceptives.
Yeah.
We've seen some states saying all schools now have to have the Ten Commandments in the classroom. It is just, I know it's a worn out comparison, but this is really Handmaid's Tale to a T.
It really feels like the coming of the Handmaid's Tale. But I suppose I'm watching for, because this is my interest, is how does a society like America, which has such a great and laudable constitution, but at the moment an extremely conservative Supreme Court, how does it push back? And so there's something called the Lincoln Project, which is Republicans who are trying to return the party to its Abraham Lincoln roots. How does it push back? What does the women's movement do? What does resistance look like in America? And so I'm looking at and reading quite deeply on how that wave begins to look. This isn't a society that sits back on its hands and merely accepts what's happening to its country. And I think that's going to be the tussle. It's going to be the shaping story for the U.S.
Rhinos are going nuclear. In a novel approach to combat poaching, researchers have inserted a tiny bead of radioactive material in the horns of 20 black and white rhinos. Called the RICETOPE Project, a group of WITS radiation and health physics experts hopes that by making horns radioactive, it would not only devalue rhino horn on the black market, but would also assist authorities in tracking its movement. Should the project be successful, it could reveal smuggling routes, assist with prosecution of traffickers, and increase the detection of smuggled horns.
onto our green shoots. Yes. And this week we have two. The first one is, and this blew my mind a little bit, it's nuclear rhino horns.
How was that?
Like, you, this was insane. And it's, in very simple terms, scientists are injecting a radioactive material called an isotope into the horns of 20 rhinos. And then through this, they can then track and trace these rhino horn should they cross borders, because you have these radiation detectors placed at various border posts across the world. And it will make it much easier for them to really keep tabs on where these rhino horn are going. I think this is mind-blowing and so cool.
Brilliant. You know,
yes.
They contain the seeds of destruction, but they contain the seeds of amazing innovation and construction. And this was one of those moments where I read that. I thought, whoever thought of that is simply brilliant. Huh?
Yes. And just in terms of the statistics, I mean, according to the International Union for Conservation of Nature, the global rhino population stood at around 500,000 or so at the beginning of the 20th century. But due to vast amounts of poaching, they are now only at about 27,000, which is just so distressing. And what I love about this is that this doesn't just stop with the rhinos. So the researchers have said that should this whole isotope approach work, they then want to start using it in the fight against pangolin and elephant poaching.
Wow, so, imagine that.
I mean, it could really, really change the trajectory of this very long-standing fight between conservation and poachers, and I really hope it's a huge success.
That's great work. Obviously, the test means that there's been a successful poaching incident, because that's how you'd have to track it. But if it gets used in the ways that you're suggesting, that's absolutely marvelous.
Methane is a major contributor to global warming, and farting cows and other cattle are partly to blame. Methane accounts for about 20% of greenhouse gas emissions globally and is more than 25 times more potent than carbon dioxide at trapping heat in the atmosphere. Now, Denmark has implemented a carbon tax on cattle burps and farts in an attempt to reach its climate goals by 2030.
So, cow farts, this is an amazing little story. It's the idea of taxing greenhouse gases emitted by cows, pigs, and sheep. And it's not a new idea, but Denmark has become the first country to actually implement carbon tax on gassy cattle, so to speak. So, I really like this story as well in terms of just the conservation approach. Denmark says that they hope that by taxing cattle, that they will essentially drop their CO2 emissions by staggering 1.8 million metric tons by 2030, which is really awesome.
Taxing cow farts.
Yes, exactly. So they will tax farmers to pay about $43 per metric ton of carbon dioxide emitted by their animals. No idea how they're going to measure that.
How are they going to measure it? And what do farmers say? I'd love to know, because European farmers are very radical. They often protest and fight against additional taxes and the reduction of subsidies. But again, very interesting model.
Very interesting. The response has been quite split, but overall, very positive feedback that they've received from the farmers. So yeah, let's see what happens in Denmark.
Very interesting green shoots. Thank you, Lizanne.
Thank you so much. It's been very interesting as always. And yeah, have a wonderful week.
Have a great week. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening. Catch us again next week for another Whole Week Wrap. Until then, why not join the conversation on Twitter, Facebook, and everywhere else? We always love hearing from you.